Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Southern New Jersey. Welcome to the show, Mark Halpern.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to your audience.
Well, great to have you here. Now, Mark, you come from a non-traditional real estate background, I think organic chemistry, if I remember correctly. So not the traditional career path. We're going to have a very interesting conversation about due diligence today. I'm excited to have this conversation because you put together a structure that is, I don't know if it's unique in the market, but it's unusual. But before we do, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Thank you very much, Victor. Yes, I really appreciate that. So yes, I'm an organic chemist. I have a PhD in organic chemistry, and I do breakthrough R&D, where breakthrough R&D, the success rate is typically 5 to 10%. And I have a 35% success rate in my niche of breakthrough R&D in phase transcatalysis is the name of it. In real estate, 35% is instant bankruptcy. But in R&D, it's actually quite good. So what I did is I took the risk management skills that I learned from R&D and I applied it to real estate investing. And in real estate investing, your probability of success, if you perform deep due diligence, is about 95%. And it's not dissimilar to a recent interview that you did with, I think, Pasha Espandiari, where he actually came from the world of poker and where he's also, you know, risk management and calculations, and you can't win every time. So then you take the, basically what he has and what I have is a good background in risk management, which actually is really, really good for getting into real estate and other kinds of private placement investing.
One of the myths, one of the ideals of investing is that there is this passive component. You just make the right investments and the money comes in just like mailbox money. Now, the fact is there are no passive businesses. They're all active businesses, and that includes real estate. In fact, the IRS does a disservice by calling this passive income because it's nothing passive about it. And yet you can invest passively in active businesses, but you got to be in the right ones. So when we talk about due diligence, you've got to find the right folks, make sure that they're asking the right due diligence questions of themselves and sharing that openly and transparently with you. And you've got to have a pretty high level of due diligence capability yourself in order to make good investments. And if you think about high net worth family offices and folks like that, they have that capability in-house. They hire professional managers and due diligence experts to make sure that they don't lose money. And you've taken a little bit of a different approach.
Yes, yeah, so I think that's a really good segue to what it is that we do. And you're right, at the Family Office Club, where we go to a lot of these meetings, the net worth of the family offices or the high net worth individuals, 10 million, 20 million, up to a billion or more. Well, my group, if you will, we have a net worth, I think all of us are under 10 million. Most of us are in like under 5 million, let's say in the 3 to 5 million range. We can't afford to hire a whole team of experts. What we do is, so we have a group. And right now, I think we're 36 members. We grow slowly because we want to have only those 5% of investors that have the patience and mental bandwidth to read every word and understand everything in the operating agreement, the private placement memorandum, and look at every cell and every spreadsheet. And then what happens is that, so we have a group of people. I have a PhD in organic chemistry. We have a PhD in nutritional biochemistry. We have dentists, always a dentist, right? We have, you know, finance people. We have cybersecurity people. All kinds of people that have a natural tendency to want to do deep analysis. And what happens also is that when you do deep analysis, most of the people, all of us actually leave our ego at the door. So what happens when you have a bunch of people that are really communicating well and are truly analytical, critical thinkers, totally objective, then when we screen opportunities in the initial screening, we call it first screen process, then we're able to screen out a lot of the deals that you shouldn't be working on and with the sponsors maybe you shouldn't be working on. But then we do the deep due diligence, the difference between due diligence and deep due diligence. I've spoken to quite a few sponsors, syndicators. My deal flow is about 300 private placement offerings per year. I cannot possibly screen all of those. And I'm a part-time investor. I'm still a chemist. That's still what I do. How do you handle this kind of deal flow? So again, we have this group of people. We get together. We have certain rules in the way of engagement, let's say, with the sponsors, with one pagers and other things that we do. And then we go really, really deep and we question every single assumption, every risk factor. Now, we cannot eliminate risk. Something that you mentioned earlier, anybody who's batting 1,000 is either, for saying they're batting 1,000, they're either lying to themselves, lying to you, or lying to both, or they just don't have enough experience. So I'm not batting 1,000. But my batting average is quite high because of two things, the deep due diligence and appropriate diversification of the portfolio.
Well, let's talk about risk, because risk is one of those things that I think is often misunderstood. I often hear people say, well, that's high risk. And in my world, that sentence doesn't even make any sense. So when I think about risk, the first thing is a risk is anything that's not in your plan. If it's already embedded in your plan, it's not a risk by definition. So then once you establish that it's not in your plan, then you can segment it further and talk about likelihood and impact. So if it was to occur, what would be the impact? What would be the nature of the impact? Is it a one-time impact? Is it an ongoing recurring impact? Is it time? Is it money? Is it feasibility? Is it an existential threat? Is it quality? Is it a feature? Whatever. There's different types of risk. And then you can start to quantify it and determine exactly what that impact might be if it was to come true. So when you're performing due diligence, are you viewing it through that lens, or are you simply looking to see if everything that is modeled is as you would want to have it? If you cross a line, you say, oh, I'm out. Or what's the approach?
Again, a nice, profound question. Obviously, you're very experienced in this, so you do perceive it perfectly. So what we do is like this. Let's say that there are risk. We're going to look at the downside. Upside is usually pretty easy to understand. But we look at the downside. And like you said, these are things that are not in the plan. The way that I look at it, the source of risk is unknown factors. Unknown factors. So let's say there are 50 factors that can affect the outcome of any kind of investment. I like private placements because I can do deep due diligence on the sponsors and on the projects. I can't do that on Nike stock. I have no idea what's going to, there are too many unknown factors. But a private placement, a single project, or even a multi-project fund, I can do my deep due diligence. So what I'm looking for is to minimize the number of unknown factors. So let's say there are 50 factors that could affect a certain investment in a negative way. If I do lazy due diligence, sorry, I shouldn't use the word lazy. If I do regular due diligence, which is what most people do, 95% of private investors do regular due diligence, they might identify 30 of the 50 factors. Well, myself and our group, we call ourselves the Triple D Mindset Club for deep due diligence. We might identify 45 of the 50 factors. Now, we're not going to be able to identify all 50 factors. I mean, an asteroid might hit the complex, and we don't have asteroid insurance. So it's really impossible to look at all the factors. But what we do is we try to identify every single factor, risk factor that we can, and then we then categorize it into one of three groups. And we do this in writing. It takes time, but for heaven's sakes, we're handing over. We're passive investors. We're handing it over to these sponsors for a long time. So what we do in writing is we say, can we mitigate the risk? Can we live with the risk? Say, okay, hey, we know interest rates might do this or might do that. I'm willing to live with that. Cap rates in 5 years will be such and such. Or is it a deal breaker? And all it takes is one deal breaker and we're done. So that's the way that we handle risk. What we do is we try to identify as many risks as possible. We also attempt to identify at least one risk that is not in the risk factor section of the PPM. That's hard to do because all the king's horses and all the king's men were required to disclose all their risks. But we come up with other risks. Like I invested in a farm in Paraguay. I did deep due diligence on the social and political stability of Paraguay in the last 10 years so they don't nationalize. That's not in the typical list of things that you're going to look at. So again, we want to identify as many risks as possible, categorize them. Can we mitigate the risk? Can we live with the risk without mitigation? Is it a deal breaker? And that's the way that we approach risk. And risk minimization is crucial. Risk elimination is impossible. You can't eliminate risk, but you can minimize risk.
Well, I want to challenge a little bit one thing you said, where you said that risks often represent unknowns. And I fully accept that some of them are unknown. But in my experience, a lot of them are actually quite known. I'll give you a simple example. You could have the risk of weather delay. Now, you know that there's no such thing as good weather or bad weather, there's just weather. But you could have weather that will delay you. Now, if you've embedded 5 days of weather delay in your plan, and you actually experienced 7 days of weather delay, well, you had 2 days of risk that wasn't accounted for. So it could still be known. Its question is, was it appropriately quantified? Or did you just do something that was overly optimistic and say, yeah, we could have weather delays, but I'm going to put zero anyway? It's still known, right?
Yes. So that's an excellent point. So let me modify my statement for accuracy.
Okay, sure.
the unknown is unknown to the person looking at the risk. So, for example, we know that weather will affect. If you put in 5 days, you know, it could be 3 days or 7 days, but there are people that don't even take weather into account. And so for that investor, it's unknown. But for us, it's not unknown. And a good example is I invested in an apartment complex in Panama City, Florida in September of 2018. And what I did is part of my deep due diligence, and everything was great about the project. By the way, I did make a 28.6% compound annual growth rate over 3 years and 9 months, but it was September. I think I wired the money September 12th. And I asked for the insurance policies to take a look at the wind. There's no hurricane insurance, but there's two types of insurance. There's wind and there's water, whatever. So I asked to see the policies, and they said, well, sure, but you're the only person that asked for this. Quite frankly, in the panhandle of Florida, we don't get what they get down in Miami. Okay. 2 weeks later, Hurricane Michael hits, which is the third most powerful category, whatever it was, to hit the continental United States. And I looked pretty smart, and I was not able to, you bring up weather as an example. All the other investors didn't even bother to say, well, what about hurricanes? And it's not that I'm brilliant. It's just, it's Florida. It's like, you know, in Kansas, I'm not gonna look for hurricanes, but I'll look for tornadoes. So really, when we're talking about unknown factors, you're absolutely right. I need to modify the way I talk about this. It's unknown to the person that's looking at it. So when people do regular due diligence, which is they hear a 45-minute pitch on a webinar and say, oh, yes. And I hate it when they say, they did this 45-minute pitch on the webinar and they say, if you want to put a soft commitment, click here. Holy crap. I mean, 45 minutes, that's what it takes for me to get to the point to decide, do I even want to perform any due diligence? People that say, oh, yeah, that looks really great. I love the sponsor. And hey, I like apartments in Atlanta. Where do I send my $50,000 or $100,000? To those people, they have unknown factors. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to take the factors that are unknown at the moment that we get the PPM and turn them into known factors. So that's what you make a great point. And from now on, I'm going to modify the way I talk about it.
Okay, that's cool. And by the way, I visited Panama City about 2 weeks after the hurricane hit. And even as we were coming into land from the air, you could see that concrete slab was the only thing left from a lot of these buildings. Everything else was just scraped clean. I mean, a demolition crew could have not done a better cleanup job than Hurricane Michael, because the only thing left was a perfectly flat slab of concrete in a lot of cases. So it's absolutely appropriate to be asking those questions for sure.
Another example is it was a bridge loan at NeuroCare facility in Sacramento. So I go to the sponsor, I say, well, show me your earthquake insurance. Oh, no, they say Sacramento, it's nothing like Los Angeles and San Francisco. And I was in the San Francisco earthquake. And I said, but it's also not the same as New York, right? So I took a look at it, all the probabilities. And I wanted to see the actual insurance policies as part of my deep due diligence. And that sponsor really likes me because he says, Mark, you ask questions that other people don't ask. And I wonder, why don't people ask about earthquake insurance in Sacramento? Like, I don't understand why people don't do that. But I've spoken with a lot of sponsors and they've told me, I even did a strategic business analysis for one of the sponsors who raised $30 million. And he says, Mark, 90% of investors don't even read the operating agreement or the PPM. And 95% don't do deep due diligence. So there are a bunch of us all around the country that we're very analytical by nature, you know, a cybersecurity expert, a guy in breakthrough R&D, you know, we're just very analytical in nature. And we're all isolated and everybody thinks that we're crazy. So what I did is I got all these crazy people together and say, you're not crazy. The rest of the world is crazy for not doing it.
Well, if I understand what your group does, you're not an investment club per se, although you do collaborate on due diligence and you each make your own individual decisions whether to write a check or not, but you collaborate and presumably by collaborating on the due diligence, you become better at due diligence both individually and collectively.
That's absolutely correct. I don't have a very low IQ and the other people in the group certainly have higher IQs than I do, but still, everybody's got a different perspective. And we also we're geographically different, we're occupationally different. So everybody's got, it amazes me sometimes of the things that I miss that the other guys pick up on and things that they miss that I pick up on. So together, you know, 1 + 1 = 11 here. It's, you know, it's not even 1 + 1 = 3. We really do bolster each other and it's really, really good. And you're right. In the end, we are a group of independent investors. We just perform joint deep due diligence. Now, every once in a while, we get a unicorn deal. I was pitched a unicorn deal very privately under NDA. I didn't have the minimum. So I asked the sponsor, and they don't even have an investor relations manager. And I said, hey, can I share it with my group? I said, yes. In the end, 11 of us got together. We put in $750,000. And you know, our IRRs are going to be in the 30s. And with a very, very short term, it's really, really good. I put in 100 and I think, whatever, 160 myself, 60, 70 from my IRA and other places. The fact that we're also a group, people tend to, even a family office club, we tend to get a lot of interest from sponsors because we're a group, but none of us have a net worth of $10 million. Sometimes we invest together, but it's pretty rare. For the most part, we're a bunch of independent investors that have gotten together and we simply perform deep due diligence together. And we don't want anybody just to join the group and say, oh yeah, I want to join the group because I want to hear what you guys come up with. No, 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 no. If you're not willing to plant the seed, water the seed, harvest the wheat, bake the bread, we don't want to sell you the loaf of bread.
Right on. Well, I wanted to have this conversation because it's not necessarily to solicit people for your group or anything like that, but it's really to have the listeners think about a different approach to doing due diligence. And maybe that's something that they can collaborate on themselves and take their own due diligence to a higher level.
Yeah, that's right. And we're not advertising for it. We do want people to join, but we only want the 5% of investors. So actually, there's even a course that we have, and I try to discourage people from taking the course. And I say, listen, we're going to go through 280 risk factors over a three-hour period in this course. And I say, this is going to be boring. You're going to fall asleep. And if you don't have the patience for this, don't take this course. And then what happens is that the people say, no, I want to feel comfortable with risk. We actually discourage people from taking the course and from joining the group. And if somebody really, really wants it, those are the people that are committed. Those are the people we want in the group. But we try to grow very slowly. We are not trying to grow fast. Quite the opposite. I'm trying to limit the growth of the group.
I love it. Well, Mark, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
So the easiest way to get a hold of me is at mark@parttimeinvestors.com. Mark is spelled with a C. That's a problem for some people. And part-time has two T's in a row.
I love it. Mark, I love what you're doing. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Mark at parttimeinvestors.com. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.